Welcome to the Russell Investment Podcast, where we take a deep dive into the world of investing. I'm Laura Hutchison, Director of Russell Investments Advisor and Intermediary Solutions Business, and today we're going to talk about our incredibly popular and newly released 2019 Value of an Advisor Study. We are especially excited because it is the five-year anniversary of the study, and it has really proven to be a very popular plate piece with the advisors that we work with. Here at Russell Investments, our corporate mission is to help as many people be better with their finances as possible. And we know that financial advisors are that critical conduit in helping investors achieve their financial life goals. I always say humans want to work with humans, not robots, when the stakes are high, especially when pulling together the intricacies of their financial lives. Joining me today to talk about the 2019 Value of an Advisor Study is Ryan Doima, Regional Director for Russell Investments here in Wisconsin. Ryan, I have been looking forward to this podcast. I love our Value of an Advisor Study. I have given it literally thousands of times, I think, and thousands of advisors. I know you have too. Thanks for joining me.
It's great to be here, Laura.
So I should start off by asking, how many times do you think you give this presentation over the course of a week, a month, even over the last 5 years?
Well, I've done it four times this week, 10 times this month. I'm not much of a numbers guy, but I think it's fair to say hundreds of times to thousands of advisors over the last 4 to 5 years, for sure.
So lots of times, lots and lots of times, too many to count. So it has been so popular. Why do you think, you've given it so many times again, why do you think it's really struck a chord with advisors?
Well, the study is for sure very, very popular. And I think it is because it's well-organized, it's easy to understand, and it helps advisors better communicate with their end clients all of the many things that they do for clients. You know, today is actually my 16-year wedding anniversary, and I've learned early and often that communication is everything, whether that's with a spouse or whether that's with advisors communicating with their clients. We know that investor statements show the cost to access the markets correlating with the investments that are on the statement, but the relationship is so much bigger than that. And I think the study has helped advisors communicate all of the many components of value, not just the investor statement and the investments associated with that statement.
Mm-hmm. Well, advisors are so valuable, and I think that formula has done such a good job of making the complex simple, not only for really communicating that value, but helping advisors themselves easily remember even just a few elements of the things they do all the time. I think it's why that's really struck a chord, that A plus B plus C plus P plus T. And so I guess with that, we can jump into the formula values. And for those who are listening in, again, write that formula down. A plus B plus C plus P plus T. A for annual rebalancing, B for behavioral coaching, C for cost of investment only, P for planning, and T for taxes, the power of the T. So why don't we start off with A for annual rebalancing? And I think one of the best things about this formula is that it highlights some of the really important things that advisors do automatically, but sometimes forget how valuable it is to their clients. And rebalancing is really, I think, a prime example. You know, the vast majority of advisors help clients have some sort of strategic rebalancing policy in place. It's just a given. It's what advisors do. And it's really valuable because not every investor has a systematic way of rebalancing. In fact, Dewey, I would say that a lot of investors actually practice reverse rebalancing, really buying high and selling low, kind of the opposite of rebalancing. So how have you seen advisors talk about and really elevate the importance of rebalancing with their investors, especially since it's such a given? They do it automatically, but how do they communicate the importance?
Well, first off, it's easy to say in hindsight that I should have rebalanced. Think about all of those investors that should have rebalanced in 2000, they should have rebalanced in 2007, they should have rebalanced in 2009, they should rebalance now, but only with hindsight is it incredibly obvious. And I think we're at one of those moments in today's world where rebalancing is one of the first things that we all learn in Finance 101, in college, in the investment world, but it's really hard to sell what has done really, really well to buy other areas of the market and of your portfolio that haven't done.
Behaviorally, as well. It's just tough. It's tough to do.
It's hard to do. And let's look at the last 10 years. I mean, U.S. equity has done nearly 15% per year. International investing has done only 7% per year. And emerging markets has done only 6% the last 10 years. So rebalancing would tell us, let's trim a little bit of the areas of the portfolio that have done well and buy other areas of the portfolio that haven't done as well. Yet the headlines overseas, the headlines that we read, again, these are very, very anxious times for a lot of people. And now we think is a great time to consider that rebalancing part. The study helps advisors talk through that, share it, communicate it, call it out, and help clients realize how important it truly, truly is.
Mm-hmm. And well, and just again, because it's something that advisors do so often, I think it's key, even for the formula, to remind advisors themselves that without that strategic rebalancing in place, whether they're doing it or they're working with a partner and they're using their rebalancing policy, it's incredibly valuable to the clients that they're servicing.
And right? Think about, again, the last 10 years of markets. It's not just about adding return per se, but it's also about managing risk. Mm-hmm. Again, clients are 10 years older in 2019 than they were in 2009, and most portfolios that haven't been rebalanced went from a balanced allocation to a growth allocation without even trying. That's the importance of, for sure, strategic rebalancing on a systematic basis.
Do you think some of those investors even realize that their portfolio looks very, very different 10 years later without rebalancing?
Well, if they're like me and they've got four kids and are busy and they've got all sorts of different things going on, that's one of the last things on many people's lists is how to look and when to look at rebalancing, which is why they hire the professionals to do that for them.
Well, and I absolutely love how we've had a few skeptics of this formula variable in the value of an advisor formula point out that it's really easy for investors to go in and check a rebalancing button right online. You know, what they don't necessarily dive into or say is that it might be easy to check that rebalancing button, but it's also easy to uncheck it as well, and then checking it again. And now you get into behavioral aspects that come along with investing, and that leads us right into the next formula element, which is the B. B is for behavioral coaching, and I think this is the area where increasingly advisors spend more and more of their time because investors benefit from professional perspective when it comes to their finances, just in order to have a better chance of hitting their financial life goals. You know, both when it comes to what to do with their financial planning and often what not to do. Now, here in Wisconsin, it's summertime, finally, right?
Exactly.
There's going to be a lot of backyard barbecues and backyard barbecue conversations, the financial conversations that come with those backyard barbecues. And I know many advisors are going to field lots of questions the Monday after those parties, helping their clients really determine if those interesting, fun backyard barbecue ideas really impact them, and more instances are just sort of fun conversation and really shouldn't have an impact on their financial plan. So, Dewey, how have you seen advisors incorporate behavioral coaching into their conversations? What have you seen advisors do to help their investors really stay invested and not make those poor, sometimes backyard conversation sort of mistakes?
Well, we have a great case study in the fourth quarter of last year. It was actually the first negative double-digit return quarter for equities in what seems like nearly a decade. And when we look at that first experience for investors to make bad decisions, again, history doesn't repeat itself, but it tends to rhyme. And with that first opportunity of a negative double-digit quarter in the fourth quarter of 2018, we looked at the investment decisions of when investors buy and when they sell. And many investors, to the tune of hundreds of billions of dollars, liquidated money out of equity ETFs and mutual funds. And despite all of the headlines, despite the 24/7, 365 news cycle that we now live in today, we know what the first 6 months at the last day of the second quarter, looks like it's been a pretty good recovery since that negative double digit quarter in that fourth quarter of last year. And for all of that money that left equity investments in the fourth quarter of last year, many of those dollars are disappointed because they didn't stick with the plan. They didn't stick with the plan that was in place to stay invested. Again, we get it. Market's down, so there's a reaction. Mm-hmm. They call the advisor. They want an action to the reaction of being down. And oftentimes, it's not a super helpful message, even though it's the right message to say we're actually going to do nothing.
Mm-hmm. Well, so, and having that perspective, having that person to reach out to. I mean, again, here in Wisconsin, it's beautiful. Finally, we're actually recording this podcast while, you know, a huge lakefront music festival is going on. And I'm sure the podcast listeners have heard the motorcycles screaming through in the background. You know, investors want to live their lives. They want to work with advisors and have that perspective to stay invested, right? So they can focus on things like motorcycles and Bark Air barbecues and lakefront music festivals. So I think that behavioral element, that behavioral, we call it coaching, is critical, where advisors really demonstrate their unique value, that perspective. Just obviously don't call it behavioral coaching with clients.
And I think we need to realize, hey, when we're brushing our teeth in the morning, we're oftentimes looking at our own worst enemy, and that's ourself in the mirror, because many investors have worked 20, 30, 40, 50 years, and that money is very personal mm-hmm. to them, and they're looking at their own worst enemy in the mirror, and that's why have somebody that is independent and objective and somewhat removed from that to help you through those challenging market environments is why we only partner with financial advisors to deliver that improved financial security for individuals.
Behavioral coaching from the advisor is critical. Just don't call it behavioral coaching. Nobody wants to be called, you know, told they're being behaviorally coached. So with that, let's move on to C. So C, the C in the formula stands for cost of investment only management, because, you know, while helping investors with their investments isn't the only thing financial advisors do. I mean, let's be honest, it's still an important part of the wealth management process. I mean, especially we work for Russell Investments. We absolutely understand that. But increasingly, it's also an area where the robo-advisors, right, the good old robos are making, you know, this more accessible at lower cost than ever before. So we both agree investments do are obviously important, but in your mind and with your perspective working with advisors, how has the role of investing changed and is changing with the advisors and teams that you're working with?
Well, first off, I think you have to realize that if you're a small business owner, inventory is everything to you as a small business owner. I mean, think of the investment arena that we live in today, where there are literally tens of thousands of different, unique, oftentimes overlapping ticker symbols, investment ideas, mutual funds, ETFs. So to say that our markets are moving faster, more quickly, more correlated to one another, all the while clients are busier with more demands on their time, means that the cost of asset allocation, the cost of security selection, and the cost of portfolio construction has continued to come down, and it's been a less and less of a focus for many of the advisors that we work with, knowing that clients are asking for so much more from them than they have historically, where it's been more heavily tied towards the asset allocation, investment selection. So often today, that cost of accessing the markets has been commoditized, and it continues to go down over time. I mean, think about the last time that you went to the Cheesecake Factory, and you think of that menu, which is, I think, 29 pages long, right? It's paralyzing when you think of how long it takes you to order what you're going to have for lunch or for dinner. And that is equally as paralyzing to investors trying to decide, what do I invest in? How do I invest in it? What are the risks associated with those different investments? And oftentimes when the menu is so large, you don't end up ordering, or you don't end up allocating the way that you should. And that cost continues to go down because of the choice that we have and because so many firms are automating that function.
Mm-hmm. But I think we've seen so many advisors increasingly spend more time on what you just touched on, the importance of having good strategic inventory, right? It's been interesting to watch advisors over the years and the way they've accumulated inventory, their CUSIPs, and in every other business out there on the planet, there's even businesses out there that help other businesses with inventory decisions, correct?
Advisors are getting really focused on what am I using, mm-hmm. why am I using it, and where am I using it, and really identifying those strategic partners that they want to partner with so that they can focus on other areas of a client's ecosystem outside of just asset allocation, security selection, and portfolio construction.
You know, that said, so again, see for, you know, investment-only management, and again, this one, I think more so than any of them, really has to do with technology. When I think of technology, I think of those good old robos. You know, we've seen, and I would say this is a challenge to all the advisors listening, we've seen the robos learn from all of the financial advisors out there over the past, especially decade. I think it's time for the advisors to really start taking what they can away from these robos. The robos are going to be able to, you know, support the advisor with technology so that advisor can stay as client-facing as possible. They've learned from us. What can we learn from them? You know, how can advisors use things like online planning to appeal to different generations of advisors? How can they use it for strategic inventory? Actually, let's stay with that concept of planning there for a second, because the next variable in the formula is the P. P is for planning. And the role of planning continues to increase. I think advisors are being asked to incorporate more into their financial plans than ever before. And I think that's a trend that's only going to continue. They're going to have to do more for sometimes even less, I would say, right? And especially for those best clients. These financial advisors, these financial plans are the heart of their financial lives, and increasingly more is being incorporated into them. So how have you seen the role of planning evolve, and especially when advisors are working with those very, very best clients?
Well, you hit it right out of the gate, and the fact that more and more people are doing financial plans. So differentiating ourselves with the financial planning is not necessarily I should be doing that. It's more of, hey, this is the way that the business is going. And I always like to say there's a big difference between doing financial planning and doing financial planning well. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not an hour-long process. Oftentimes with clients, advisors and their teams are spending 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 hours a year, a lot of time. And the end client may only see 20 or 25% of that. There's all of the work that's being done behind the scenes. So there are big differences between one plan and the next plan. And there's always the art and the science, right? Some folks focus on the science, other focus on the art. I think it's the blending of the art and science behind financial planning that is what separates the best advisors from those clients that are just trying to do this work on their own. And again, it is complex. It's very, very difficult to do, and it takes a while. It just does. Mm-hmm. I think we've all seen that. We know that.
But we've seen that. What do clients want? Clients want a plan and a partner, and this process to help them get there, right? And this plan is this critical element, and increasingly advisors being able and asked to link together even more and more intricacies of the clients and their families' financial lives.
So, and it is retirement planning for sure, but you think about all of the other things from insurance to long-term care to
college education.
I mean, you name it. The list goes on and on and on and on. And again, blending the art and science of what's important to which clients and when that's the most important to them is what makes a real face-to-face local advisor so critically important in this whole value of the advisor study that we're going through here today.
Mm-hmm. Well, so again, P is for planning. Incredibly valuable, we both agree, again, because most investors have a really tough time just even putting together their financial lives, much less having some sort of strategic plan in place. So planning is just this area where advisors will, I've seen them do a lot of work only to present a full plan, you know, someplace, you know, a plan that they've put in so much time and energy, and have that potential client take that plan and walk out the door and implement somewhere else. And my ask of advisors, my friendly reminder to all advisors, is planning is incredibly valuable. Don't give it away. Talk about the process with the clients. Talk, you know, maybe present a sample. Try and avoid you know, doing that full-scale plan with a client when they haven't fully bought into that process yet. Don't give it away. Would you agree? You had to have seen this, Dewey.
Yeah. Do great things for clients and remind them about it, but make sure that they're invested in the mutual success of that relationship. Absolutely. There's no doubt about it.
Mm-hmm. Especially as we go forward. Again, we know that they're that working with a human advisor and helping, you know, people put their financial plans together. You know, we are moving into a world where there's not enough human advisors. So really valuing that planning process and then making sure that they own it and they're communicating it and they're working with folks that recognize its importance. All right, so we've been through A, B, C, and P. It is time for the T. Brings us to this final formula value. Again, the T, the power of T. T is for tax smart investing and the value of tax management and working with a truly tax smart advisor. Tax managed investing, it's really become an area where I think advisors can demonstrate real value, even more quantitative value, especially after 2018. I see Dewey shaking his head. It's just not about what you make, it's also about what you keep. Right. And I know, Dewey, you talk about the value of tax managed investing all the time, especially after last year. But could you remind us of those numbers, you know, from last year on taxable versus non-tax, you know, tax managed returns?
I mean, the three numbers that I think quantify this and why it's so critically important. And sometimes it takes a year like 2018 to magnify the importance of this. But the three numbers are 91%. 86% and 11%. So for those of you following along at home, 91, 86, and 11. 91 represents the percentage of equity funds and mutual funds in the ETF world. Both of them, 91% of all equity funds and ETFs had a negative total return in calendar year 2018, meaning pretty much everything lost money. 91% of those were negative. 86% generated that lovely tax form called 1099. 86% of them generated that lovely tax form that the clients gave to their CPA, and the average distribution as a percent of the account value or of the NAV of the investment was 11%. So again, there's not too many things that get clients frustrated than having a negative return, getting that tax form that they give to their CPA, and then having their CPA tell them, hey, the tax bill that they owed in a down year was larger than they've seen in many up years historically. So 91, 86, and 11.
Not the most fun conversations, right?
No, not at all.
Well, we know taxes matter, especially to clients who have assets. It's not just about what a client makes. It's also about what they keep. And I think this is, again, it's a great way for advisors to really demonstrate even more quantitatively their value. So between 2014 and 2018, if we look at the Morningstar universe of non-tax managed U.S. equity funds, on average, that group gave up 206 basis points to taxes as compared to the Morningstar U.S. equity tax managed universe over that same time period. It only gave up 54 basis points. Dewey, that's 152 basis points. Again, the power of the T, the value of tax-managed investing. You know, for advisors who are doing managed money, I mean, 152 basis points is more than they are, you know, usually charging in fees.
Yeah, my liberal arts math can figure out 1.52% is incredibly valuable over time. Taxes have been and always will be such a critical component of advisor value and managing that. I mean, the IRS allows many techniques, actually all techniques, to take place throughout the 12-month calendar year. But many clients and many individuals focus on one component of the tax managed investment philosophy, which is tax loss harvesting in 1 month out of the 12. The IRS lets you do it any one of the 12, but we tend to focus in on it in the month of December. And oftentimes it takes an experience, kind of that pain of 2018, to kind of further magnify the importance of this topic. It's always important, but as in anything, kind of when it hurts, it becomes that much more mm-hmm. important and much more of a focus.
Mm-hmm. Well, so how are you seeing advisors incorporating this tax awareness, these conversations into their practice? How are they talking about it with their clients?
Well, I think first off, calling out the different approaches that are available. I mean, the one approach is I do exactly what I do in the qualified account, and I put that exact same philosophy in the taxable account, mm-hmm. right? So no difference from one account to the other account, right? So that's called kind of sticking your head in the sand and not doing anything about it. The second approach is I'm going to use municipal bonds to manage the interest income at a federal exempt level. But if I'm investing in any equities, those equity funds are really the exact same from the qualified account to the taxable account. You know, the third thing would just be a totally passive approach to investing. We just think that it's not one or the other. It's really like, how do we manage the entire pie, right? How do we manage the entire portfolio for taxes? Part of the challenge is helping clients understand and quantify it. Because think about the way I did my taxes, right? I got the 1099. I gave the 1099 and put that in a manila folder, right? The manila folder said important tax documents, don't lose. I gave that important manila folder to my CPA. The CPA took all of the information from that folder, put it into the tax software. The tax software spit out what my refund amount or what I owed was. And then if I owed money, I paid it from the checking account. You know, so it's like five or six steps to connect the dots. It's the investment account that is the culprit of generating all of those other things. And there's so many other things that are impacted by a too large of a 1099, given mm-hmm. the results that you actually received.
So what I'm hearing you say is that it's a great conversation for advisors to help connect those, can we call them tax dots?
I like it. Let's go with that.
Tax dots, really helping the advisor connect those dots for the client who sometimes just doesn't put it together all the time. So that's in itself incredibly important. I'm also hearing you say, though, the inventory implications to an advisor, right? It's not just about having taxable but also non-taxable or tax-managed options, I should say, correct?
Well, I mean, we know how it all goes. Very few clients are super excited about selling a position to pay a tax bill on it. Like, we get that. So what ends up happening is in a lot of advisors' non-qualified components ends up where the investment sprawl happens, right? That's where inventory gets a little dicey, to say the least, because you end up just collecting QSIPs, ticker symbols, in taxable accounts because the client doesn't want to pay a tax bill to get it into more of a systematized approach. Mm-hmm. But again, that's got all sorts of other ramifications of just collecting all of these things, and we're letting the tax tail wag the investment proposition, which again, we know how that always works out.
Yeah. So having both types of inventory available, and there's also a general message in here, which you know I love talking about, which is making sure there's good strategic QSIP control, right? Good strategic inventory decisions for an advisor. All right, so this has been great. So let's just restate the formula real quick for everybody that's listening in. Again, A plus B plus C plus P plus T. A for annual rebalancing, B for that good old behavioral coaching, C for cost of investment only management, P is for planning, and T is for power of taxes, right? Power of that tax-aware advisors. Dude, it seems pretty straightforward. You know, based on just these five areas, advisors are obviously really valuable in helping their clients live better financial lives. And we know most advisors do so much more than these five things. So I guess the next question is, what do advisors do with this formula? Again, you've given this presentation thousands of times. How do you see advisors using the value of an advisor materials in their businesses?
Well, first off, like we opened with, because it is so organized, it is so succinct, it's easy to understand and communicate. What I think it has allowed advisors to do is help them move the conversation from the investor's quarterly statement, because most investors associate their quarterly statement, which is where the investment costs are also highlighted. They're correlating the investment costs that they see on their quarterly statements with the investments on that statement being managed by the advisor. It has helped the advisor call it out and share all of the other things. It's helped the advisor broaden the conversation to include all of the other parts of advisor value, not just the investment selection that shows up on the investor statement on a quarterly basis.
Mm-hmm. It always comes down to good, consistent communication. In conducting this study, we have found so many advisors are doing most of what's in this formula. I think my next question is always, do their clients know? Do their clients know? Do good things and tell others about them, usually multiple times. So how are advisors just consistently communicating all those good things they do to their clients?
Well, making sure that that client knows that all of these things are going on mm-hmm. behind the scenes. They might only be in front of that client a couple hours a year during their biannual reviews or annual reviews. So just like you said, summing it up, I think very well, do great things for clients and make sure that they know that a lot of that work is done behind the scenes and in other areas that they may or may not be aware of. Mm-hmm. And just be making sure that we're clear and concise with that communication of all that stuff that is going on mm-hmm. all year long.
Mm-hmm. I always think to myself, so especially for advisors that are doing all these good things, that constant good communication, you know, what would your investors say if they were asked to describe you to their friends? Would they be able to talk about you in a way that is referable, correct? You know, how are they making sure that all those good things that they're doing is moving into other places, you know, around them and helping to help other people, correct?
And I always like to say an experience is referable. I mean, to everybody listening in, think about the last amazing experience that you had where somebody went above and beyond your expectations, right? You probably told a few people about that. And I always think an experience is referable, and setting expectations is everything. I think we've always known that, but setting expectations and making sure that we have the time, the energy, and the resources to make sure that we're delivering that wealth management experience to clients, because that experience is more referable than, hey, I'm beating this, or you're doing that, or hey, this one's better than this one.
We live in a world of experiences, the experience economy. Okay, final question. So after 5 years of talking about this study to hundreds, thousands of advisors, what's the one or two main things you've learned that advisors listening to this podcast just need to know?
So I would implore you to think about this. Are you a fee manager, or are you a risk and a wealth manager? I mean, it seems like in our business today, it's a race to zero. And Warren Buffett said it the best, price is what you pay, value is what you get. So again, think about that. Are you a fee manager, or are you a risk and a wealth manager? That'd be first observation. The second one is, are we reminding, reinforcing, and communicating all of the great things that you're doing for all of those clients? Those would be my two takeaways. And hopefully this study with the five components of value helps you call it out, identify it, and share it with more clients on a regular, ongoing basis.
Yeah, the formula values are so good, both for the advisor owning their value and then helping to communicate it as well. So I love that fee manager or risk and wealth manager. It's as simple as that. Well, thank you, Dewey. Thank you for your time today and really sharing your perspective on this incredibly popular piece. And so for all of you listening, to sum up what we've discussed today, again, number one, we here at Russell Investments, we so believe in the value of the advisor. The advisors are the critical links in helping investors have a better chance at hitting their financial goals. Again, humans want to work with humans when things get really complex, especially when it comes to those finances, those financial decisions in their lives. Number two, our value of an advisor study really highlights five areas where many advisors deliver lots of value. You got to own that value and make sure you aren't giving it away. The value of an advisor formula, that ABCPT, is really helpful in communicating the value. And then finally, value is only as good as it is consistently delivered, communicated, and always elevated. You know, an area where advisors can look to elevate their value, especially now after last year, is learning more about tax-managed investing. I mean, that's a really quantitative element of the five. You know, the power of the T, the two truly tax-aware advisor. So we hope you enjoyed this episode. If you want to know more about investment themes, business insight, be sure to check out past podcasts and blogs on russellinvestments.com.
This podcast was recorded on June 28th, 2019.